So I go to McDonald's, you know, every few months or something. Every time it's, I think it's like a dollar for any size drink, right?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, like I don't get the largest one just because, you know, I usually get like a Sprite or something and I don't want to feel like too gluttonous. So I'll get like a medium.
Huh.
But then I just feel like I'm like, I feel like I'm like wasting money somehow because I could have gotten a large for the same price. I don't know. It's like a weird, there's like a weird kind of logic issue in my head whenever I go to McDonald's with the drink situation.
Okay, so you're the person that doesn't get the maximum size for the same price.
Yeah, just walking out of a place with like a half gallon of some drink, I don't know, I just can't, I can't bring myself to do it for some reason.
Well, because I think McDonald's started this, right? And like everyone had a dollar menu. It's just that no one had that like concept of $1 for any size drink. And then I think, if I remember correctly, they did it. And now I'm pretty sure like most places do this $1 for any size drink or any size coffee or whatever. And there has to be psychology behind it, right? Like somebody did a study. And for whatever reason, if you say any size is a dollar, that sounds better to people for some reason.
Yeah, even though it costs them like 5 cents, no matter what you're doing. It's just like the price of the cup, basically.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I'm on, like, that's what they do everywhere, but...
Well, yeah, but I guess I'm saying, like, you're not, like, you feel like you're getting this, like, huge deal when they say any size for a dollar, when the difference between a small and a large to them isn't that much.
Yeah, I wonder if it's more, it might be both, but is it you make people that were going to get the large feel better because, like... they're not getting taken advantage of by getting, you know, they're like, ha, suckers, I wouldn't get the smaller one because it's the same price, and they feel like kind of smart about having gotten the largest size.
Yeah.
Or is it people like you that actually will opt for the smaller size just as like a self-control thing, and like everybody wins because you chose to get the smaller size for the same price, and I mean, McDonald's saved on whatever amount less material and soda you took.
Like the math works out more than you think just because some people are saving money, some people are spending more. Well, before we get too far down the McDonald's train, do we want to start with follow-up? Because I have some news that I'm excited about with my home screen. Yes, I'm sure I'm probably the only one.
I'm excited, Gil. Go for it.
Okay. So I think you brought this up before. Like, we need some sort of name for this section where we like talk about, and I don't have a name for it yet, but we do need a name for like us being too like OCD about certain things, like things that don't matter.
Right, we need a word.
Oh yeah, there we go. There's our next challenge. But I have breaking news here. Right before I came here, or right like on the bus, the Reddit app updated, and it used to be an all orange background with the Reddit icon in the middle. Now it's like a white icon with an orange circle with the white Reddit alien in the middle.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so now Reddit works with my main piece. I can take it back out of the dock. It was in the dock before because everything else was good. And the dock was just the ones with no white borders. So I've got that going on.
I am so entertained by this, Gil. First of all, they're listening.
Yeah.
But second, I just looked at my phone and you're correct. And actually, it kind of messes up a bit of the vibe of what I've got going on. So I'm not happy about this, but...
Now you're going to be like custom making your open source apps.
Did we talk about that last time? You should talk about that a bit.
Yeah, I think we talked about it a little bit, but I've made progress since then. So I don't remember what all has been said, so I'll just kind of quickly run through it. But I use this workout app called, actually, I don't even remember what it's called anymore because I renamed it. I think it's just called like Bodyweight Fitness. And so the issue is that it has a solid color, like kind of a, in my opinion, ugly green background for the icon. And I'm moving, as you all know and are very excited to hear, to a all like white background icon set kind of for my home screen. So that just didn't fit in. But I found out that that app is open source. So I've downloaded the source code and I've been making changes to it. So I've updated the icon, I've updated the name, so I have the name now as Alien Fit because it's the Reddit recommended routine, and it actually fits in the name where the other one had like an ellipsis because it didn't fit all the way. I've changed the color scheme to like this blue-green color, and I've like removed a lot of like extra text and stuff that was on the homepage. There's also like a text button for the start workout button. I've just like made that look like an actual button, or I haven't done it yet. That's the only piece that I have left is to like style the button, but I'll be updating that. I removed some of the like other just like fluff in here that I don't need. And basically I've turned the app into what I need to like make it as easy to use as possible for me, while changing the icon. So I'm going to send you my home screen here, and I have two Reddit notifications, so you can ignore that. But I'm looking for your opinion on this. Is kind of the final version of my home screen, I think.
Okay. I have a question. Did you say that this is like a Reddit recommended routine?
Yes.
So there's a subreddit?
So r/bodyweightfitness. Yeah. So r/bodyweightfitness is the subreddit, and they have a recommended routine that I'm following, and somebody made an app kind of doing that routine and all the progressions and everything, but I have made changes to it. So there's my home screen now.
Pretty smooth, Gil. I actually kind of like how those notifications now, it almost looks like a little moon orbiting the Reddit app.
Yeah, like it's kind of detached.
Yeah, and I guess it wouldn't look as like that if your background weren't white, so that's probably not what they were going for, but I like that.
I also moved away from the single app in the folder, and I've moved to just having, because I've noticed like I do use a lot of the apps and like in the folders, obviously, but I mostly use the ones on the first page of the folder. And the single folder thing, I couldn't really get working the way that I wanted it to, because I had to like add a blank icon, which looked good on the home screen, but when I opened the folder, it no longer looked good because there was a white icon with like a kind of a grayish background to it. And I could see that the icon was there, and I just wasn't a fan of that, because I had to do that to like center the icon because everything else was centered. And anyways, I landed on just like moving everything back the way basically it's supposed to be, I guess, where there are 9 icons on the first page, and I'm liking that a lot.
I like it, Gil. It's more functional. You can see stuff where things are. I've never been a big fan of that, like, one per folder. If you could make it look better, but they're always up in the corner, and it's, like, kind of just weird, so I approve of this.
Yeah, well, I think my problem with it was that when you have, like, a background and you have such different icons for everything, adding on top of that these little grids of, like, this little grid of 9 icons, like, it just takes it over the top of looking too cluttered.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now it's, like, so sparse. It's just white and then icons. Adding those 9 things, like, it doesn't make it look as busy because there's so much less going on around it.
Well, the one thing I would say, so if you kind of maybe remember my home screen, but I have actually gone in and added a small line to kind of underline. So you're not far from what I've got going on here. And I kind of really like my little line that I added, because it just kind of puts a separator between, you know, so like it basically in that white space on above and below your core apps in the middle there. I think it might be interesting to have something like a design or a line or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I don't think I like explained more broadly just for people that don't feel like looking in the show notes. But what I have going on is 4 folders along the top. You can see all 9 icons in each folder, but then below that is a blank row that are just white icons. They're just bookmarked icons from some site where you can choose what picture is shown for the icon. So I have 4 empty one of those, so there's a whole empty row, and then I have 12 icons below that, all with white backgrounds for the icons. Then I have 3 icons in the dock that don't have white backgrounds, but are kind of critical apps for me.
Yeah, it's nice to have 3 in the dock for, you know, 1 is centered. And this, again, back to our roots here, CGP Gray, I think on Cortex, right, he talked about how it just looks nicer to have 3 centered. If you'll excuse me one second, my smoke alarm has decided I put in a maintenance request. Okay. I do love it. But every 10 hours, I got to press that button. I am on the island from Lost. I'll be right back. Okay, hello.
Hello.
It has been dormant. Tized. I don't know. It's off for 10 hours now, so we're good.
I just sent a second screenshot just because I had a temporary app on the second page, and just to make it clear that there's only one page going on here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I almost like an app on the second page just for those three damn dots, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the three dots do kind of look nice with the darkened one even centered.
Yeah, because I really experimented with maybe somehow getting those to not show up at all by having some kind of special white background, and I couldn't do it. So, you know, what's unfortunate is you have to have two at the minimum because of the side thingy, right?
Yeah, which I don't know why that needs to be, like, marked with those dots. Like, you can't get rid of that, and you can't get rid of your homepage. So why do we even care? Like, why do we even need these two dots? It's no longer for navigation. It's just kind of, like, left over for when people do have multiple pages.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit nice for discovery, I guess, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, I've been using this for, like, years now. I know that it's there. Maybe keep it on for, like, the first, you know, month or something, and then stop showing it.
Yeah. Well, I have a comment and a question, Gil.
Okay.
So my question is, in Alien Fit here, you have... Well, you don't have this, but there's a little vaguely visible yellow dot. And is that, have you only deployed this on yours? Is that what this is?
Yeah, that's just saying that it's a beta app. So I've deployed this through test flight.
Okay. There's all kinds of little markings and, you know, like when you've, what is it? When it updates and you haven't opened it yet or something, it has a little dot next to it. And yeah,
I hate
all
that.
I mean, it's nice because it encourages you and at least lets you know, like, this thing has changed.
Yeah, but then I have to, like, go through all of my folders and open every app for a split second to get rid of those dots.
Yeah. Comment is that I really like the dynamic apps on Apple. Like, Apple has special abilities, right, because they make the operating system. And so the calendar and the clock are dynamic in that they change with the date and the time. And I love that. So what I really like with the calendar is if you put it down in the dock... It loses that little calendar label, and with the white background, since it is white in the background of the calendar, now you'll lose your, I don't know how to make this work in your current situation here, but if you could make it work, you could have it almost look like the calendar is like a free-floating dynamic widget thing, and I really like the possibility of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice. I'm trying to... It would mess up my dock unless, like, those three apps happen to release white icon options. Which obviously we know that messages won't do that, so that's kind of not happening. But I would like that a lot. But I guess a more likely scenario would be to just allow us to not show the names, because, like, I know what all these apps are. I don't need to read every time what app I'm opening. Like, I know them by the icon well enough to, which just goes back to, I guess, like, you know, the customization, like the how customizable iOS can be. But, like, give us the option to get rid of those because we know what these apps are.
Yeah, I'm sure there's somebody that, I don't know, it might be Johnny Ive, right? It might go all the way up to him where they're just stressing about how much freedom do we give the user. Or maybe someone is very confidently doesn't want much freedom to be in the user's hands. And I don't know, it just feels like if I were in that position, I would be so back and forth on, like, oh my gosh, should we let them rename the apps or turn the names of the apps off?
Yeah, because sometimes I will see people with Android phones and I'm just like, that is hideous. Like, you are clearly not a designer. Not saying that I am, but, like, you've ruined your phone, in my opinion. So it's nice that you can't really... Oh, man, actually, I have a story. It's a very short story, but... So somebody at work, like, we were talking... Like, he was showing me something on his phone. Like, I got the, like, some security system thing and he had it, so he was showing it to me. He opens up his phone... And it's got probably six pages. And then he's, like, rifling through all the pages trying to find this app. They're all, like, there are probably, like, six folders on each page. But they're, like, not organized in any way. Like, there are multiple folders with multiple, like, they have the same category name. There are some with just, like, emojis. And they're, like, not grouped together. Like, they're not all at the top or all at the bottom. It's just, like, random folders, like, mixed in with all these random apps. I don't know how he gets anything done, but it was really hard. Like, I don't know him that well. It was really hard not to say, like, anything about it. It was just awful. And I was like, yeah, let me show you my phone with my, like, custom, like, I had to edit, like, an open source app just to make my home screen look the way that I want. But yeah, I didn't get into it with him, but I guess you can ruin the iPhone in some cases, but it is very difficult, which I do, I guess, like. But, and I guess like this particular example, getting rid of the names, I would imagine developers wouldn't like that very much because they want their names to be like shown under their app, maybe for discovery or people are sharing. I don't know. But I could see why developers would want their name always being under the icon, I guess.
Yeah. No one has ever commented. So I have the Gboard set up with the black, so it's just like pure black, and it blends in with the body of the phone really nice. And then my home screen is custom. So it's like, I put a lot of effort in here, and I don't think one person has ever been like, oh, wow, what a nice home screen you have. So, one day.
Yeah. My wife thinks it's ridiculous that I'm editing this app, and I was like, well, at least I have Paul on my side. Kind of.
I don't know if I'm you're taking it to some real extremes there, but I do appreciate it, and that's pretty cool that, you know, I've never even heard of anyone doing that, so props.
I'll take it.
Okay, so here's a question for you, Gil. Patch notes. How do you feel about patch notes?
I know that you're talking about like developer notes, like when an app is updated.
Yeah,
so I understand, like, there are lots of people now that just say, we make regular updates to keep our app great. And I guess I'm okay with that because I know that I'm, like, an edge case in that I actually, like, will go into the app store and see what's been updated recently and read all the patch notes.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I get to one that doesn't say what it did, it's kind of annoying because, I want to know what was changed, even if it is just, like, minor bug fixes. Overcast does a great job of this, like, keeping up with, like, actual patch notes. Pokemon Go, there's like some other like it, the more like fun apps, I guess, do a great job at it. But then there's like, you know, Instagram that just has the generic message, but I much prefer the ones that actually tell me what they've been updating. And then sometimes they'll put some humor or something in there because they, you know, they don't really care. So they can tell jokes and stuff like that and make it more fun. But I don't know. That's how I like my patch notes, I guess, though. How about you?
Yeah. I'll have to dig through and maybe they'll end up in the show notes, but I used to have like a folder of funny patch notes, and it was something about like somebody got fired through them one time, and I think it might have just been a joke, but it was good fun. So maybe that'll make it to the show notes. But so for me, here's my thing. One side of the issue here is it's like, well, no one looks at them anymore, so why waste any time? But at the same time, it's like, what, does this take maybe 2 minutes to do? Or maybe you have to proofread it, and so maybe it is like a little bit of a burden. And then on top of that, maybe the real reason is like, this is just an extrovert, like, there can be liability in these patch notes, like either revealing, you know, your ulterior motives here, or like, you know, if Uber has to put what they've changed, then it's like people start to write news articles about it rather than them having to like kind of discover them themselves. And maybe no one ever really does discover it if it's not in those notes. So maybe it's like a strategic move for companies to just not put them there / just lazy. But at the same time, I use this as a bit of like a red flag of like, I'm not super sure that I trust this company if they've decided to just not inform me about what they're changing on their app. So it's a bit of like a respect thing that I wish.
Yeah, I've never like internalized it that way, but I think that that's what it is with me too. It's like, I don't trust what you're doing all that much, or maybe that I don't trust that the changes you made were like in my best interest. Maybe they were like, oh, we added a bunch of like new ways to track you.
They could also just not put the change in there, you know? It's like, that's basically what they do when they put the blanket statement. But, you know, what if they did put their changes, but they just didn't mention, you know, some nefarious thing, and like you would never know. But
yeah, because that list list already exists. They have their, you know, they have the items that were on their last sprint before this release that they had to get done. So like, why can't you just like copy paste and like maybe edit and shorten it? Like, just spend like, it would take like 15 minutes before you launch. Like, you could do it while the like you're archiving the files in Xcode or whatever.
Yeah, I would just be curious kind of to hear from, I don't even know who does it usually. Maybe it varies by company, but is it like the actual programmer? Or, I don't know, surely there's some kind of PR person or involved, or I don't know.
I think in most cases it's the programmer. But there are different permissions in iTunes Connect, or I think it's called App Store Connect or something now. But Like there are different permissions you can give to people. So I guess it's also possible that, yeah, the developer uploads the files and like gets it all ready. And then like somebody from PR is pressing the button that says like go live or whatever.
Any other things with the home screen and stuff?
Nope, that's all. But just happy that I'm finally almost there because I've been spending way too much time on this.
No. I used to just like, I would wake up and then like a couple hours would go towards, you know, which app should, like, just two different apps in two different places, right? It's like, yeah, which should be where.
Yeah. And this all like snowballed because Evernote changed their icon to a white background and it like too many of them were white and it was just like super off balance then. And it just kind of snowballed into all this.
But on the Reddit front, I have a couple things that I just want to talk about Reddit real quick. First thing is it has come to my attention very recently, like today, that you get 3 minutes to edit a comment on Reddit before editing it causes it to have... Are you familiar? It has like a little star when you edit something.
Yeah, but I thought that was immediate.
No, I think you get... This is what I learned, right? Like you get, I think, 3 minutes of kind of, you know, just basically under the assumption of like people are going to revise what they wrote maybe rather than it being like a full-blown change or, you know, addition to something that they wrote. So that grace period is kind of cool. And I guess just my question is, how do you comment on Reddit? Is it fire and forget or did you kind of like revise it?
I think for me, it's usually like I'll fire and forget. And then once I get some replies, I'll look back and realize, oh man, there are a bunch of typos. and then I'll go in and fix them. How about you? Are you more crafting it?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but like, see, this is almost, I wish email had some equivalent because I really like to hit some kind of official button thing and then go in and modify things. And so this new thing with, I have 3 minutes, because I don't like that star because it looks like I'm being shady or something. If you look at my comments on Reddit,
yeah,
like every single one has a star because I end up going to revise it. And I wasn't aware that if I got it under 3 minutes, then I would keep my...
Well, I think that's kind of what people have done is like kind of how we think it's shady when there are no show notes or when there are no like patch notes for an app. Like people will type edit and like explain what they edited. Like just so everybody knows, like this is kind of my original comment. I just fixed some typos.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I definitely do hit publish and then I don't think like I don't ever then not read it and change something.
Even like with, like, I wish they gave you the 3 minute thing with posts because obviously you can edit the, like the, I guess, body of the post, but you can't edit the title of the post. But like,
oh yeah,
without fail, I'll, even if I reread it 5 times, I'll have some sort of stupid like typo or I'll like be missing a word or something. I've got to like delete the whole post and repost it and yeah, wait 8 minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I wish they would extend that to posts, but...
My other comment is, so I'll lump this into one. So it's just sharing images on Reddit, and I guess online in general. And my main point here is that, so I was trying to share, I wanted to share the full resolution of that flag that I designed, the like United States New Worlds one with the circle, and... The obvious thought is to just put it on Imgur. But the thing with Imgur, and maybe if you like inspect Element or go in and like you can find the raw image upload, but it, short of that, from what I can tell, even, you know, if you upload something to Imgur and you can go and you can get the Reddit link, and if you look at it on a browser, it does just load an image. But then if you... And it, like, the URL ends in .jpg, right?
Yeah.
It's just a JPEG file that it's pointing to. But somehow, I don't know how they even do this, if you look at it on mobile, it will, rather than just load the image, it will load, like, the little, you know, elements of the page around the image. And I just don't, I don't trust it. I don't trust that it's loading the full resolution. I don't want people to see, like, other content when they look at the image, which, of course, Imgur does want people to see other content. And just... I'm not super happy with how they handle that.
Yeah, whenever I post anything, I'll post it on Imgur, and then I'll like have to do the like copy you know, address source or whatever, so that I'm not like sharing the imager link. I'm sharing the file link that that imager page is displaying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, hey, I'm sure it's still like compressing it, like it as it saves. I don't know if it saves a full resolution version in anyway, but it at least gets rid of everything. So it's just white around it and you're not getting all of that extra kind of like junk around there.
But. Well, is it though? Have you looked on it on mobile? Because that's what I thought. And then I started clicking on these links with my phone and it actually loads other stuff around the image.
I'd have to go back and check. But I haven't noticed that, but it's possible.
Well, so anyway, my solution here has been, I just searched kind of, and I found a thing called IMGBB. Nobody names their things in ways that I could pronounce. I guess imagebaby.com. I don't know. What they say is, it's like, oh, it's full resolution. And they do the same thing as Imgur, where the images, like if you click on it, at least on mobile, I think it loads stuff like it's a mobile version, and I don't like that. But at least with it, if you just look at the picture and then you right click and you like open image in new tab, then if you copy that link, it is just the image, whether it's desktop or mobile. So I've been using that, and it does like explicitly comment that it's full resolution. So that's kind of my like imager alternative right now. And it's just, I found it shockingly difficult to share just the full resolution. I don't want to make an account. I don't want it to be compressed. I don't want it to have other junk around it. Just the image, you know, uploaded to a website. And I almost tried to do it on Squarespace, but Squarespace was like, I don't know, giving me a lot of junk, and it's just a cumbersome process.
So Reddit has their own like image hosting thing now where you can upload it in the post. I wonder what that does as far as like when somebody clicks on it, because I don't even know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it, I think it might just load the image. I'm not sure if it compresses it, but also the problem is, so for this particular example, I had uploaded I think this problem came about, I was just kind of doing Hello Internet flags, like I think I sent you.
Yeah.
Or just little modifications to the existing designs. And I had put an image that had a tiny flaw. So I was just trying to put the full resolution image in the comments. And it's like, I'm not going to make an entire separate post just to get this image right, because I can't edit it, you know, once it's been posted. So just a tricky situation.
It looks like when you post just through Reddit, it is just the image and it's just black on either side. So it's not actually just the file. It's still being like formatted in some way by Reddit, but it's just black with the image. And it's on i.redd.it.
I'm pretty happy with that. It's just that I'm not going to go like make a post just to link to, you know, like I can't get it on Reddit without making a post somewhere. And if I've already posted, then I can't use Reddit, right?
Yeah.
And then so as like a corollary to this discussion of difficulty of images on Reddit, my other thing that I ran into, there was a discussion of the Space Force logo with the most recent Hello Internet.
Yeah, I did want to talk about that a little bit.
But so on the Hello Internet subreddit, people were discussing, you know, what's the best logo and just different logos, right? And I found this one that's really cool. It's like a patch. And I wanted to share it in a way that was a link to the original person's post. So they had an Instagram post and an Imgur post. And I don't know if it was maybe part of a gallery on Imgur or what, but I could not share the link and get it to generate a thumbnail, which, you know, it's like, Reddit is supposed to, you're supposed to kind of link to these people, but no one's going to see the thing if it's not thumbnail worthy, right? If it doesn't generate a thumbnail, then they're just kind of going to scroll past it. So my compromise, fortunately, it was watermarked. And then what I did was I put the image like as an image upload, like I downloaded the picture and then uploaded it to Reddit. And then in the comments, I put links to both of the places and stuff like that. So
what's funny is, so I recorded a podcast yesterday on Two Tims Talking, where I recorded with a guy named Ska, and we were talking about this a little bit, and he sent me a Reddit link to this patch, and I'm looking at it now, and this is you, so which is funny. We already talked about this a little bit, and you're the one that posted it. But yeah, I do like this one a lot. Where did you find this? Just like scrolling through Instagram, or somebody was talking about this already on the subreddit?
I think I just kind of searched Space Force logo, and just went down Google Images until I saw something I liked.
Do you want to explain Space Force maybe for the people that haven't heard, maybe for the one listener that doesn't also listen to Hello Internet?
Okay, so the real basic idea is that I guess we're adding a branch of military, and it's like, is this, you know, there's already Air Force, I forget what it's called, but there's an Air Force division that's for like satellites and stuff, and they even have commercials, I think. So it's like we kind of already have this, but we're going to, I guess, have a dedicated branch of military for Space Force. And there's probably just a lot of political reasons that make Trump look good or whatever.
Yeah.
But it looks like it might happen, right? So it'll be a, I don't know what number, but it'll be a new branch, right? Like, is that the 5th, or are we counting Coast Guard in that? And so it's like the 6th or 7th with National Guard. I don't know. But it'd be a new branch, and so, you know, it'd have the whole logo, and it would just be really cool to have, you know, a dedicated, you know, this is the stuff of fiction where it's the United Nations Space Command and Starfleet, and Space Force is not the best name ever, but it's not bad. I'll kind of take it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, as a result, there's been kind of logo design contests, and I don't know. Take it from there, Gil.
Oh, I don't really have much besides that, but it is a good, I guess, branding name just because it gets people talking because it's kind of silly, I think. Like, it's kind of, like, out of a movie. I think that I agree in that, like, why do we even have this? Like, the only thing that I can imagine them doing is focusing just on, like, maybe, like, communication and, like, monitoring people, but do we need a whole branch for that? Like, there's not going to be, like, I can't imagine, like, war's fault like entirely in space. So maybe you could use some sort of like, you know, Dr. Evil laser on the moon sort of situation that just seems way too far off. I don't understand what this branch is for, but it's fun to think about like what the logo should be. And the one that you have here is much, much better than any of the ones that I think are, that are proposed. And maybe we can get into that a little bit later, but
quick fun fact is that there is, I think multiple treaties that like everybody has signed that prohibit the militarization of space, at least to some extent, right? So there's like spy satellites and things, but to put like a laser or nuclear missiles or whatever bombs in orbit would be like major violation, UN would not be happy kind of thing. So that's been part of the reason that it's been, you know, like I think we would maybe be there in some capacity. There would be like real militarization of space without that. But at the same time, you know, it's like we're not exactly to the point that we could be really benefiting from the resources like mining and stuff. So those two reasons, we really haven't militarized space yet. And actually, I think it's been detrimental because I think like we would be a lot farther in the space program if we weren't preventing the militarization of it. But anyway, I think it's inevitable that this falls to pieces at some point in the future. So there will be, you know, there will be conquest of space and nations wanting land and resources at some point, you know, presuming we leave the Earth. And if we don't, then humanity just kind of has to end at some point. So,
which is unfortunate because it would be nice to keep space like this kind of pristine place free of war. But I guess that's kind of not,
I don't know. It's inevitable. I had a history professor who would talk about how like war used to have just in general this honor to it, where it was like you line up in a row of troops and you don't jump out of the way, and it's just if you get shot, like it's, that's the like way that things are fought.
Yeah.
And it was the same with like machine guns. They were like, oh, this is an uncleanly weapon of war or something. And as soon as it becomes like a major advantage, that just gets thrown out the window.
No, I think you're right. We could go back to those days, though, where you just, like, have a war, and then somebody wins, and you walk up, and it's like, oh, it was a great war there, sir, and you shake hands, and then off with your day.
Well, there's a lot of books that do, like, a big sci-fi theme. I forget what right now, but they'll do, like, simulated wars. Like, I think either Asimov or Ian M. Banks, there's a book or multiple where they just simulate the war. And it's, like, accurate enough that unless, you know, to a 90 or 95 percentile or something, it's how it would have went, but nobody has to die. So
that's interesting, though, because I feel like that would accomplish the same thing. Like, if you knew that, like, the loser of the simulation has no motive to go through with the war at that point, I guess the winner could just say, screw it, I'm going to kill you anyway. And you have nothing, you can't, like, now that I know that I'll win, there's nothing you can do about it. But, like, there's much less incentive to even like go through it at that point. Which I've never heard that as an idea, but it sounds like that would actually be effective.
Yeah, I haven't read the book. It obviously doesn't work if like it's all or nothing and you're just civilization is going to end without, you know, if you don't participate, you're just going to get destroyed.
Yeah, because then you're then like, okay, now I have a 5% chance. I understand that, which is, you know, not zero.
Yeah, so there's incentives and things. But if you had the right structure where there was some kind of, you know, like a UN that is just above governments and kind of, you know, if somebody wages war after they've lost a simulation, we just all group up and annihilate them. You know, it could work.
Kind of my, I guess, hopeful theory is that, and I feel like I might have mentioned this before, but whatever. So, like, when thinking about, like, I guess, like, communities or whatever, like, who you identify as, you're kind of like, so there's, like, your family, there are the people in your household, there's your neighborhood, where it's kind of like, oh, my neighborhood is better than your neighborhood. There's, like, your state or your city, your state, and then your country. But then past country, you can no longer say, like, my, you know, you can say my country is better than yours, but you can't say my planet is better than yours. So there's, like, no unity around Earth itself. So I'm wondering, like, once we get to, like, thousands, like, a, you know, probably not a few hundred years into the future, maybe we've colonized Mars, maybe some moons of planets and things like that. And they're, like, there are multiple bases of generations that were only born on those planets or moons or whatever. Like, we'll then be able to, like, will we then be able to unify under, like, oh, we're all from Earth. Like, will there finally be peace on Earth because we have Mars to go to war with? Or, you know, I don't know. I just kind of like a, I'm just curious how this is going to go on. Like, is there some kind of hope with like unification under Earth because of that? I don't know.
I don't know either. The only thing I'll say to that is I think, and maybe we've talked about this before, I don't remember, but this is another thing we could create a word for, which maybe exists already. I don't know. But the idea that like you can extrapolate out space travel and then kind of just like it's so easy to think about everything remaining the same except for getting better at space travel. And the reality is it's just so hard to predict the future because all of the different technologies are going to advance at the rates that they're going to advance. So I just feel like I don't know, it's not safe to assume just like current culture and politics and everything except we have spaceships. So I think, you know, you add blockchain, you add maybe a virtual reality, and we, you know, no humans really expand into the universe because we're all just in simulations and the robots do that kind of thing. There's just all kinds of possibilities where if you, like, look at all of the stuff, I think it makes it just so hard to see really where things are going to go. So maybe it'll change and that won't be as much of a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, there are way too many variables to even try to start making any kind of prediction.
It's like people wanted the like flying car, I guess, right? And it's like we could make a flying car, but it's just like, all right, batteries didn't advance that well, and you know,
yeah,
whatever else would make it kind of work, like propulsion and like rocketry, like it's good, but it's not like make your car fly kind of good. And it, I don't know, it's tough to do, but maybe. Okay, Gil, I got two things. Do you have any other stuff you want to get to for sure?
Nope, we can get into your things.
I got two things. Number one is an update on watches. And so, if you recall, and I'm trying to recall how much I've said before, but I think last time I left it on, pretty much there was just one. So what I'm looking for, just to clarify, is I want to be able to easily set a specific time, right, like 6:30. I want to put a little marker on 6:30, and then I want to easily be able to look at a watch and see, all right, how much time is there until 6:30? And I originally, as we discussed, had like a digital concept, and I was working on an Apple Watch app even for a while, and that would work. And the Apple Watch app, I need to give a little bit more love, but it's basically there. But in the time since then, I've realized that analog watches actually accomplish this because you can just set the like bezel, right? So the little thing that spins around them. You can set the marker just at the 30-minute position. And it doesn't work great if it's over an hour, but basically if you just like watch the minute hand to see when it aligns with the little triangle on the rotating bezel, that effectively does what I want it to do because I can glance and see, oh, okay, there's like roughly 5 minutes until this hand aligns. And so where I'm at is I have a $20 Casio that we talked about last time, and it actually works pretty great, especially for how cheap it is. It has the date, has the day of the week, and it has a bezel that does not click, which is sad, but it is pretty nice for just setting to a specific time so I can keep an eye on, like, all right, this is when I need to leave by or, you know, do something or whatever. So that's where we're at. But since then, I have compiled a list. I've looked a little further just with, like, Google Images. It's actually really easy because I can just quickly look at watches and see, okay, does it have a countdown bezel? And that's pretty much the only qualification, just countdown bezel and it being quartz rather than mechanical. And I have now found 9 watches that do this. And so I will share the image with you.
9 watches, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's the one that I mentioned before, which is the Pilot Mission Timer. And I love that watch. Like, everything about it is just awesome. The only thing is that it does not have a date. It does not have an illuminated bezel notch thing, which I don't care that much, but it's a little bit of a thing. And then it is also, like, not currently for sale, which is probably the biggest deal breaker because I would have it by now if it were. Moving on, I've got 3 Nixon watches, and these are the kinds of watches that you can find at, like a JCPenney's. And that's what I don't like, is it's like a fashion brand.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also, like, pretty expensive, so I'm not into those ones. In the middle of this image, I have what's called the Timex Originals Dive, like, style watch. It hardly even has a real name. And it's actually perfect. It has the date, it has a countdown bezel, it has a little bit of illumination. So lume is like the hands light up in the dark, right? Like, they're charged by the sun, and it's, you know, there's like toys for kids and they glow in the dark kind of thing, like that.
Yeah.
So I love this thing, but I can only find like one person who has ever talked about it on the internet, and like chances are basically zero that I will ever find one. They, I think, are from 2011 or something, and they don't seem to exist anymore. Then we've got this Accutron Deep Sea, which also is pretty cool, but it's expensive and vintage, and also its bezel is not, like, you turn a little dial to turn the bezel rather than, like, actually being able to turn it, and I don't like that, so it's out. And then on the bottom row here, we've got, on the left, a $700 watch that technically accomplishes everything, but it's $700, and I just don't really love the look of it. And then on the far right, I'll skip this one in the bottom middle. On the far right, we have one that is only available in Japan, but it does, you know, it has the bezel, it's got kind of a cool look, it's got the date on there. I really like that one, and it's, you know, it's a lot, but it's not, like too bad. It's not too bad, but the fact that it's only available in Japan and super rare and stuff like that, just forget it. Forget it. I don't like it that much. So the only one that I really have that, like, I could buy and meets the criteria here is the bottom middle one, which is called the KHS Shooter Red. And this is like a tactical military type company this has a countdown bezel. It only goes one direction, which I don't love. And it's only counterclockwise, which, if anything, I would want it to go clockwise, but it only goes counterclockwise. But I do love how, like, minimal the face is. So that's my, like, leading thing right now, and I've been very tempted to buy it, but it is not, like, the cheapest thing ever, and it's also, like, pretty huge. So it has its problems in its own right, but this is where I'm at. This is where I'm at. You'd think it wouldn't be that bad to get, like, a quartz watch that has this particular kind of bezel. Like, those are my 2 requirements, but there's not a lot of overlap.
Well, the Airspeed one doesn't even, because the bezel is going clockwise. Right? So the numbers. So is that even... I guess that's the most expensive one, too. But I like the Shooter Red.
Oh. I don't know if I just picked a wrong image, or maybe it doesn't actually do that. And I maybe it shouldn't be in this list. So never mind that one, I guess, maybe.
Okay. But I do like the Accutron Deep Sea a lot, which is very similar to the Pilot Mission Timer that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, less than half the price, like a third of the price. But I do know that you were, like, you sent me, like, a model from Fusion 360 that, like, of your own watch. So have you made any progress on that, or kind of where are you leaning? Is that a result of finding these, or?
I do want to at least make a 3D printed, like, high resolution. So, like, SLS type, I don't know if you know, but, like, clear. It's, like, clear. Have you seen these things?
Yeah, it's like a resin print as opposed to, like, layer by layer plastic filament.
So I'm working on a design for that, and I do want to at least make it that, because, you know, as soon as it's metal, it's like a whole whole thing with like the, you know, find us someone to mill it or whatever.
You can 3D print metal too, like get it made 3D printed by a company.
That's true. I was going to maybe do that like as the second step, because that seems easier than actually like setting up machining to mill it out of metal. And also plastic, like the bezel, I don't really know how to design a clicking bezel, because there's something like, I've looked at some videos, there's a wire in there or something. And so it's like a whole thing to make metal work. But if it's plastic, you can just take advantage of like how it kind of flexes and just have it sort of like,
right.
Yeah, there's this little ridges, and if you just put enough force, then it'll slip the ridge and it goes to the next position. So plastic seems like the way to go right now, and I'm kind of in the process of that. But yeah, so that's where I'm at. And I have one other contender here. I'll do a little shout out. There's watches called Sin, and they just overall, I might've talked about it before, but I love all of their watches, except that of course all but one of their watches is a mechanical movement, which again means rather than quartz being like electronics with a battery, a mechanical movement, you know, you wind it or it has this little thing and it's just totally, there's no electricity. It's just springs and stuff and cogs and gears, which is nice, but they're so much less accurate and just,
yeah.
But the other thing, I found this one and I love everything about it so much. Of course, it is super expensive. It is not available for purchase for some reason right now, and it is not quartz. So it doesn't really do it for me on a couple levels, but I love the design. It is like explicitly meant as like a tactical watch. It's like depth rated to 500 meters, which is just ridiculous. And especially I like that the minute hand and the main triangle on the bezel are both like orange. So you can just ignore every color but orange, and you've got your like, you can see how much time remains until the bezel. So, or until they align.
Yeah, I do like this one a lot. It seems like there are a lot of lines going on.
Yeah.
But I do like it. And I also wish it maybe like a silicon band instead of this metal. It looks like it has. But how much is this one?
I think that is sort of a plastic.
Oh, okay.
But it's something like $700, which is not bad compared to some other like mechanical watches. But it's definitely like annoyingly high priced. But I didn't mention this before. What's cool about the Shooter Red, which also I didn't mention, is limited edition. So like, there's only, I think there's less than 100. Also, their website is in German and there's an English version, but like their Facebook page is only in German. And so like I'll be using the translate feature. And from what I can tell, there's like less than 100 of these as of like a month ago left. And so there's not that many. And once it disappears, the only thing is this, you know, like this same watch, but with the face, like it has a lot more white going on. And I just don't like it at all. So it's another annoying problem with this watch. But anyway, the cool thing about it is rather than this like luminescent paint, which is most watches, like almost all watches just use this like painted on and then they charge from the sun and then they glow in the dark pretty much and they fade over time, right? And you have to recharge them with light. And that can last like, if it's really good, it'll go for maybe like 8 hours maybe. I don't know. I'm not super knowledgeable, but like through the night maybe. This thing, the Shooter Red, has what's called like tritium tubes. So there's little tiny tubes, almost like a Nixie tube, that are filled with tritium. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. I don't understand the technology exactly, but there's some kind of radioactive material and its half-life is like 12 years. So effectively you get maybe like, I think they say 24 years of it glowing, and over the 24 years, it'll like slowly get slightly dimmer. But you know, that's like 12 solid years of glowing. And that means that it doesn't matter whether it gets charged, like it doesn't get charged by the light. It just glows for 12 years, which is really cool because you don't need to worry about like recharging it. And it'll last, you know, through, you know, 12 years worth of darkness. So I really think that's super cool.
That's the Shooter Red one that does that?
Yeah.
Huh. There is safety concerns with that at all?
No, it's safe. It's some kind of tiny amount of nuclear. You know, like the tritium paint or the lume, the regular paint, like even on the watch I'm wearing right now, it's like super weak, but it has some luminescent paint on it. But it's, you know, not anywhere close. I think it's radioactive. I think that's how it works. but it's not remotely close to enough to be unsafe.
Okay.
Yeah, I really like that, and always on, and then especially always, even in the dark, glowing is a pretty cool thing. And this Shooter Red one, aside from the price and availability and all that, would be awesome if it just rotated the bezel both directions. But still, it's pretty great. So, I don't know, I might actually go for that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I do like that one a lot. I want to see, it looks like it has like a nylon band. What kind of, I can't really see it that well. But you can change the band, I guess. I think I like that one the most.
You can pick, actually, yeah, on their website, which is tricky because it's in German, like I said, and it English translated, but, you know, how great of a job do they do? Eh.
Yeah.
Let me send you, see if I can send three at once here, see how this works out. These are the ones that I like. That red one, I don't really love that, but it is what's called a NATO band. And so this is really cool, like gold standard for just a watch band that looks nice. It looks nice on good watches. It looks nice on bad watches. And what's really cool is so the material actually goes the entire way underneath the watch, so you're not in contact with the metal. And then also if like one of the, you know, like I think it's like a lug or a spring, what do they call it? Like a bar, spring bar. The thing that like at the bottom of the watch just attaches to make a little, I don't know how to describe this, right? So it's at the bottom of the watch, there's just a little bar that goes across, and then there's a space so that you can attach a bracelet, right?
So you can attach a bracelet? Oh, this is like connected to the watch, like the like body of the watch to change out the band, right?
Yeah, it's just so that there is a negative space to put a band on, right?
Right, yeah.
But the point of the NATO strap, partially anyway, I mean, it's got a lot of cool benefits, but if one of those things pops off, like for whatever reason, the NATO band, just the way that it's set up, it's not just a loop of fabric, like it's kind of redundant on itself. So if the thing pops off, your watch will remain on your wrist rather than if it were just a traditional band and it became detached from the watch, you know, then it would just fall off your wrist, right? And like potentially break.
Yeah.
The NATO strap is cool because your watch will just stay on. It'll like flop around, but it's a lot better than it falling to the ground. So.
Yeah, I've actually had that problem. So before the Apple Watch, I wore the movement watches. And like a few times I ran into the issue where that like little spring loaded thing bar would like come detached and the watch would just fall off randomly, like putting my hands in my pockets, which was really frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd mentioned the movement watches before. They're pretty cool. I do like their design, but I want to bring attention to the fact that those are like, so for people, it'll be in the show notes probably, but MVMT, movement.
Yeah.
But they are almost basically just a dropship company. Do you know that?
Oh, really? Because I did their, so the what I got their watch because I did their Indiegogo. And they talked a lot about, you know, them designing the watch to be beautiful but not expensive and all this stuff. But I guess it's possible I got duped and they just, you know, bought it from a manufacturer somewhere.
Like, I'm not saying you got duped because it's like these things, if you want that like clean design, and I do want that clean design, they are like the best people to go to because not a lot of people are doing that for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, they're probably technically overpriced and they probably pay like a whole lot less than it. But still, like if you want that kind of watch, it's like, it's the only way to go, right? But I'm just saying, maybe at this point they do have like a design department or they collaborate overseas and do customize to some extent. But I know that like, at least initially maybe, I think they pretty much took existing watches and sold them. Maybe they did like modify them with like a cleaner, the dial is what's called like the face in the middle, right, with the stuff. Maybe they added their own dials and stuff. I don't know. This is mostly just I'm interested in the entrepreneurship aspect here, where essentially they just, it's a branding.
Yeah.
It's a branding company, which again, I'm not saying is bad, but I mean, it's good because they made it work, right? Whereas if it was like just their own company, you got to like assemble a watch and all that stuff. And like, I just think it's very interesting. And I think actually they've just sold to some company, Fossil maybe, or I don't know, but I think they sold.
I haven't really been keeping up with them. Yeah, I only really started like with, like I said, the Indiegogo, and then I got the Apple Watch. So I've been using that since it came out. But I do like it. Like, there were just like minimal watches with the one I had was really no numbers, just like red notches and just pretty much all black with not a whole lot going on around it.
I like them too. I mean, this is kind of the kind of company that I would ideally want to start, where it's really just provide something that doesn't exist, but also just minimize the amount of work that you have to do, because everybody wins that way.
One thing I just noticed on the watch that you sent, what is this one called again? Red, Shooter Red. There's a little radioactive symbol. You see the little, yeah, I think that's funny. The little like radioactive symbol in the middle there.
Yeah, that's for the, so on the left of that is something like H3, and I think those two symbols are about the how it glows in the dark. Like, those are the two, I don't know. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with how that one looks, except I think it'd be huge in real life.
Yeah, it does look like it might be a little big.
I wanted to mention the idea of lost film. Gil, are you familiar with it?
Lost film?
Or lost media, yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, I can assume what it's about, but why don't you explain it?
It's just content was created, a lot of content was created before there were adequate means to preserve that content. Either not that valuable cultural things, you know, just nobody paid enough attention to and the film has degraded or it just wasn't kept track of and it doesn't exist anymore. Or even in some cases, there's some like really good stuff that hasn't been preserved. And so my example that I know off the top of my head is like even the moon landing footage, right? Was,
oh yeah,
like the full resolution, as I understand it, was stored on some tapes that have either been lost or recorded over.
Yeah, what I heard was it was like recorded over.
Yeah, so just, we don't even have full resolution of the moon landing footage, which is crazy to me.
That seems like something you would want to, like, that should be in like an airtight, you know, container. I don't get how that gets mixed up with like somebody's vacation footage.
Well, the other example, so Star Wars, the original Star Wars, right? And this has been talked about on, again, Hello Internet. But the original Star Wars that aired in theaters, like, doesn't exist today. There are very close representations in certain formats, but, like, things have been changed in one way or another, whether it's just lower resolution and people have scanned the film, like an actual, you know, like, movie theater, what, a film roll, I guess?
Yeah.
They've scanned the film and they've uploaded it, but it's lower resolution. But then, you know, like LucasArts has released Star Wars in like a high resolution version, but there's a lot of touched up different colors and different like added, what is it? Like, I guess computer generated imagery type stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's this one guy, and they've talked about it again, like I said, on Hello Internet, but there's a lot of efforts, but one in particular that like shines out is the despecialized edition of Star Wars, which is a guy who's like cool, like his PhD and all this is about like film editing and stuff. And he just like took it upon himself to compile all the sources and just, you know, manually, very meticulously adjust it to be just the right colors and remove the CGI where it was possible to remove and stuff like that. And so it's like, even the original Star Wars film, which is like a huge thing, it doesn't exist in its actual original format. Or if it does exist, I think it does, right? But they haven't released it, or they haven't taken the effort to release it in a high definition.
That seems like a Lucas control thing. Do you think like Disney has that, and do you think they'll ever release that as like a, like, I don't know. Actually, I have a confession to make. I've never seen any Star Wars movie. I just know a lot about it from like listening to different things online. But whatever it would be, 50th anniversary or whatever. Like, do you see Disney ever releasing like the actual original footage if it exists?
I would say no. I would say no. Because like, as I understand it, I think there is some effort in that. Like, you've got to get the colors right and things. And like, if I were in charge, right, I would just be like, hey, guy that made the despecialized editions, you're in charge of, like, here's the original footage. Create as possible, like, as real as possible, the original Star Wars, and we'll release it. But, I don't fully understand, but I think some kind of corporate junk gets involved, and it's just, it's not worth it for them to do, or it's not, you know, like it harms the brand. I don't know. They don't want to take the risk. I don't get it, but I don't think it will happen.
Yeah. They don't want to admit that all the changes that they made didn't work.
I don't know. It's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it seems unlikely, and that's kind of, yeah, I don't know. That's what we've got. And they've done some pretty great restoration work, though. And I haven't, here's the thing. So this is released. This is legal stuff here. It's released online. It's not the easiest thing to download because you've got to, like, either you can do it the easy way where you basically just click download, but it takes like 18 hours to download. Or you can go through a torrent, but there's like a lot of setup on that. So it's a pain in the butt to download, but anyone can. And the thing is, it has like this thing on it that says, you know, you should only download this if you own whatever, like a copy of the original Star Wars or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that's how like it hasn't been taken down, because otherwise, you know, it'd be like not allowed, even though it's like a restoration effort. It's still, people would be able to watch the movie for free without paying. But
yeah,
the little caveat is that like they just say you shouldn't download this if you don't own it. So it's a weird, interesting kind of legal gray area too, where I think just no one has said take it down yet, I don't think. Like the guy that created this hasn't been contacted. So I think they're just like, all right, they're trying to restore it. Like, let's let them do their thing.
Yeah. And then when they finish, we'll buy it off of them.
Yeah. Once we get the final version, we'll just pay them. So that's pretty interesting. And then the last one, I mean, there's a million instances of this, and Wikipedia has even like three different articles. Let me real quick, I'm going to check here. They've got a list of lost films, list of incomplete or partially lost films, and list of rediscovered films. So like Wikipedia is all over this, and I don't know. It's just interesting. It's interesting. And so here's the thing. So Gil, I just watched a film last night called Tucker, the Man and His Dreams. And it is like, Howard Hughes actually appears in the film, but I'm going to compare it to Howard Hughes here, where this guy, you know, the 50s probably, whenever, like after World War II, he tried to build a car company called Tucker Automotives or whatever. And it was like this awesome car with all kinds of revolutionary features, and it just didn't pan out for him. Like a lot of bad things happened, and they only produced like 50 cars before everything shut down. And similarly, like with this Timex watch in the middle of my thing that I sent you, you know, I cannot find that anywhere in the world. So between these cars that also, by the way, the Tucker cars, like only 50 were made. They're these really cool looking cars, you know, like those go for millions of dollars. And this Timex watch, like I would actually probably be willing to pay a decent, like more than it's worth kind of thing because of its rarity. And just like, so just, it's interesting when physical things, you know, because just everything's so mass produced, even when physical things are rare anymore, it's kind of interesting and weird to me. But what's especially weird to me is when digital things are rare.
Yeah. Like, are there people like treasure hunters for lost films?
Oh yeah, there's quite a community. I mean, I'm not that engulfed in it right now, but there's subreddits and there's a wiki like dedicated to just lost films, and there's a lot going on. But my last example here that I have for you, Gil, is one that personally has affected me. So my girlfriend has a friend who, her mom used to watch this film on cable and had recorded it to her cable like box, you know, because it used to air like not super frequently, but it was on TV occasionally. It was a film called Return to Rajapur, Rajapur. And it's like an Indian film. It might be, I don't know if it's Bollywood or just otherwise it's an Indian film. I think it's even like the US version of a different Indian film, or maybe it's released both places and has a different name. I don't know. But the point is, this thing was on cable. Like, people are not like super aware of it, but it was a thing. It was a thing, and you could watch it, and people have it recorded on their DVRs.
And it was only released in 2006? That one?
Yeah, I think it's 2006.
Okay.
And this thing, so her friend, my girlfriend's friend, was looking to get this for her mom for Christmas as a thing, because she really likes this film. Her mom really likes this film. And you know, they got rid of their DVR, so she doesn't have it anymore. And she was like, oh, okay, I'll buy it. I'll go to eBay or something. Gil, this film doesn't exist. Like, it's almost level of, like, I'm suspicious of someone having intentionally removed it. Because it's not that old. It was on cable TV. I cannot find this thing. I've asked Reddit. I've looked around. I've, like, gone to every sketchy website. It is not on the internet. There's a trailer for it. There's, like, IMDb stuff about it. Even this film, which was, you know, decently widespread, is just relegated to absolute obscurity at this point. And I find that especially fascinating because a lot of these lost films, it's like, well, it was aired one time on the radio or it was on, like, you know, TV back when TVs were black and white and then never aired again. But this thing was just, it was on cable in the late, or I guess mid-2000s.
Yeah, it was 12 years ago. How is anything, any movie in the 21st century just like lost with never, just, like even in the list of lost films, or hold on, which one? The rediscovered films, there's one from 2000. I don't get how that's possible. Like, was it not on, you know, Netflix?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's just like, it's not like there's crazy demand, because I'm sure a copy exists somewhere, but it is so far out of my means to acquire. You know, what would I do? I just like,
yeah,
contact random pawn shops or the director. And I tried, I think, but she is not like, or he or she or whoever directed it is not like super into the internet and online and stuff.
I could see this as a, like, I might look for this just for fun.
Please. If you find it, like, I'm tempted to offer a reward here. Like, it's not easy. And there's a lot of things, like, I'll just, fair warning here, there's some sketchy websites that claim they have it, and it's really just the trailer, or it's like, they don't have it. Like, unless it's actually 2 hours that you can skim through and see the whole film, it's not there. And I haven't found it yet. And I, like, admittedly, I'm just kind of using Google, but, like, I don't know. I'd look at Pirate Bay and everything. It is obscure for how not obscure it is.
I'll send it to you in the next week.
I mean, like, Seattle's a big place. Maybe, yeah. Maybe if you look locally enough, something, you know.
$2 million budget.
Get it up on Amazon Prime for me, Gil.
Yeah, I will. I'll talk to Jeff.
You have him on speed. What's like the equivalent of speed dial these days?
Favorites.
You got him in your MySpace top 8, Gil?
Yeah. Okay, now I'm just looking for this. So
you're not going to find it. You're not going to find it quickly. You might find it somewhere, but it's not on the surface of the internet, so.
Oh, I'll end with one small piece of follow-up that I forgot to mention. So we were talking about like the screen time thing on the iPhone and for iOS 12. So I don't know if this is new in the latest beta or if this has always been there, but you can set a, like, without having to go into like parental control mode, you can set a separate passcode that's separate from the one to get into your phone to get back into apps. So, like, if I wanted to, I could, you know, give it to my wife and say, yeah, you could, or give it to anybody and say, just put a code in here, but remember it. And then if I really need to get into my phone, I'll text you or something. But you can set a separate code just for getting into apps if you really want to be strict. And, like, you can't resist when you get the little notification that says, you know, your time's up.
That seems, so, like, back to our conversation about how Apple, you know, keeps it pretty limited in what you can do and stuff. That seems not like them.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad it's there. I wonder if it's going to stay there. I don't know how often do they remove features.
Yeah, well, I think we're on beta 9 now. So at this point, it's getting pretty close to the final version.
Hmm. That seems niche to the point that, like, I don't know, it just doesn't seem all that like them. But at the same time, it is like the one feature that might actually make screen time effective for some people. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Should I stop recording?
Yes. Well, don't.
Don't. Okay.
Are you recording?
I'm still recording.
Real quick, just for funsies, I took a picture of like my setup for recording before we got started here.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if you want to like take a picture of your like what things look like real quick. That might be fun for the show notes, I guess. I don't know. I took one. So.
Okay, I'll take one. Okay, sending it now.
Craig, you've been great. Don't be afraid to contribute to the conversation, buddy.
Save the day, though, for 4 minutes of the middle of the episode.
He's a good little, it's like we're in court, and, you know, we're both, like, opposing lawyers or whatever, and then Craig is, like, the stenographer.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know who's the judge. It's the audience. Audience is the jury.
I'll be the judge, too.